another buzzword is customer validation. And I wonder, even kind of knowing what that term is supposed to mean, sometimes I wonder, does it mean that I'm validating that my customers are the right ones for me, or are my customers validating me and my business? So who's doing the validating in customer validation?
Well, if we want to be a successful entrepreneur and we want to end up collecting money from people by solving a major problem, we need to, I guess, be really clear that yes, this problem exists for other people, and yes, our solution is worth them exchanging money for. And I think all of us think that we're smarter than the masses, right? We think that we are this image of Steve Jobs, who Steve Jobs knows what his audience wants before they do. And the reality is nobody's like that. Steve Jobs doesn't make his decisions in a vacuum. It's based on lots of research. And the only way to figure that out is to ask.
A lot of people will repeat the Henry Ford quote, and I'm probably going to botch this, but yeah. It goes something like, you know, if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said better carriages or something like that, you know. And a lot of people will use that as the way of thinking, sort of the structure to say, well, I'm building something that nobody's ever seen before, and it's going to be so amazing. And when I say people, I mean me. I mean, that's what I did when I built my first startup. It's just like, I have something that people don't even know they need, and it's going to be so awesome. But there's something a little off with that.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to learn what our starters are taught in terms of, I mean, if they truly do have something, you know, how do they ferret that information out of their audience without necessarily confusing them with a solution that, quote unquote, has never been heard of before? You know, can you still figure out what the need is? And can you still ask, hey, if I had something that was kind of like this, would that kind of fit? But I trust that folks like Melissa and others are going to teach them exactly how to find that information out.
So customer validation, how much is enough?
There is no enough. It never stops, ever. So we're going to make them do 20 interviews. And again, some people will do 3, some people will do 30, but our goal for them and our assignment for them is to do 20 in the next week and a half. Is that enough? No. So I say you can move on and start to build something when you start to see patterns, or move on to the next question to validate when you see a pattern, which usually happens once you hit double digits, but it really depends on your market and the people and the types of questions you're asking. But usually by double digits, you start to see patterns. You can say, okay, 5 people out of 10 have said this. That's a pattern, and that's something that's valid. And then if you notice something like that and you ask 2 more people and one is yes and one is no, then yeah, you've kind of validated that. So then you can feel safe to move on to another question or another thing to validate. So I like double digits, but there's no magic around that. It's when you start to see a pattern. If you ask 4 people and they all tell you exactly the same thing, you can be done.
So cue up the Missy Elliott Webster Dictionary intro, because it's time for Accelerator.
Transitive verb. To bring about at an earlier time.
To hasten the progress or development.
To move faster. To gain speed.
To hasten the progress or development.
Pause.
To move faster.
I'm Josh Elledge, and welcome back to the Accelerator podcast. Quick reminder, if this is the first time you're listening to Accelerator, we'd strongly suggest that you go back and listen starting at the beginning so you can get to know the story and cast of characters. Today's podcast covers day 2 of the Starter Studio Bootcamp. And after a lot of work on their customer value propositions, the founders really started to get the value of their product down to a science. Squiggle leads off with their value proposition.
Our web app helps travel agents who want to book travel to multiple cities by reducing the waste of time and making more money on like traditional search methods.
Holy crap. That was pretty darn good. I got really clear. I don't remember your value proposition the first time around. Did you feel that this one was stronger?
It was tweaked. A lot of what we said now was there. Mm-hmm. We just tweaked the words a little bit. That's it. Otherwise, a lot of it was there. As this just helped clarify it.
Okay.
And then use some better words in driving that.
Less buzzwords. I didn't hear a lot of buzzwords in there.
Today, you're going to get to know Tom Waterman from Backstory a lot better. Tom is a really engaging and charming guy. But early on, he struggled with narrowing down what his product was.
Our story engagement platform helps donors who want to give meaningfully by decreasing mistrust and making the giving experience more personal, unlike GoFundMe.
Hey! Good job. I don't remember yours before.
What did you say?
I had no clue what the last time you shared it with you were offering. So it's getting clearer.
Accelerator producer Brian Orr got a chance to pull Tom to the side and find out a bit more about him and Backstory.
Okay, so in the first version of the name of your business, it wasn't Backstory. It was something else. So what changed?
So it was initially Changemaker. Did more research on it, and it looks like a company called Ashoka. I believe it's Ashoka or Ashoka. They're a global organization inspiring social entrepreneurs, and they have a page called like The Changemakers, and it's kind of like a community of people who want to do good in the world, which is super cool. But a little too similar. Everything would get mixed up. And I don't think it related enough tangibly to my concept, which is all about supporting stories. It was more about doing good, right? It had to do with the goal in mind, but it wasn't specific enough. So I literally had like 700 words written on a page, and all of a sudden I wrote story and then backstory, and then I wrote backstory again, and then I wrote backstory in all capital letters, and it just made sense because it's you're getting the backstory about a meaningful problem in the community, and then you're also backing the story through donation as well. So it's making stories which move us very actionable. I can do something about them.
So give me your elevator pitch.
That's something I'm still, figuring out, but I can kind of break it down to you. So I think there is a disconnect in the world where there's a lot of content being shared and going viral, but no one acts on it. So my entire goal was to enable individuals to leave a meaningful impact on the world based on the causes they believe in. I want to start in the community, so I want to start backing the stories in the community. So a story would be about maybe a family that needs help. And it would, we build a story around that, and we would enable people who read the story and get captured, their hearts get captured by it, to join it by donating. And then they'd be a part of the story from then on out, basically connecting with the organization and the people on a deeper level. So it needs some work. Obviously, I'm trying to refine that quick elevator pitch. We just started training on it yesterday, but I would love to like have something really good for you. I just don't.
That's fine. Yeah. So who is Tom Waterman?
I think I'm someone who never stops thinking. I like to always think about why. I'm very interested in about what makes people tick, what makes the world work. Why do we accept certain things and don't think about others? Why do we think we can't change the world? I'm very, obsessed with that conversation. I'm someone who feels good when I can make someone's day. I think it's the little things in life that really go overlooked. I'm someone who loves to stay active, but maybe doesn't do it enough. So I joined this little adult soccer league. I'm trying to get the legs working again. It's tough when you're old, 25 like me. I'm someone who never wants to settle, never wants to, rationalize things. I want to make sure that I'm achieving the most I can. I don't always do that. I'm, the biggest person who can say sometimes I don't do enough that I should be doing, but I'm always kind of aware of that. Love America. I love the entrepreneurial spirit. I think, we're not guaranteed anything in life, but as long as we're given our freedoms, we can do anything and change the world. Sitting back and letting someone else do it, or that we're entitled to someone else giving us something, is ridiculous. All for earning your way. We could go on, man.
So I'm hearing. Questions? Yeah. So if someone said, you sound like an idealist, what would you say to that?
I think it's important to have good fundamental beliefs, but maybe getting down to the nitty-gritty of it is the key. Yeah. So to a certain extent, I like to be an idealist. I believe in the goodness of the world, but also you need to be a realist and see what works and what doesn't. So hopefully I'm a mixture of both.
What's keeping you up at night?
Validation, definitely. Being able to pitch to someone and then being like, yeah, that's freaking cool, man. That's kind of what my heart desires, I guess. So I'm looking to gain that in the next month, just to be able to refine my idea and make it a really simple, powerful one that people can grasp. Because I know that once it catches on and catches fire, it can be really, really powerful. But it's getting to that point. That's going to be interesting.
It's one thing to have a value proposition. It's quite another to know whether that value proposition will actually sell in the real world. Melissa had the founders develop some customer validation tests in order to make sure the starters don't spend too much time barking up the wrong tree.
Okay, so one of the things that Eric Ries talks about a lot is that waste of resources. And one of the things he's very passionate about is not talking about wasting money and time, but wasting human capital. If you have a bunch of really smart people working on a problem that nobody cares about, they're not curing cancer. They're not solving world hunger, right? So his whole point is that there's so much more that you should be doing if you're not creating value, so go create value. So, and to him, it's more of this like, save the world, like we should be working on only the important stuff. The lean process is all about build, measure, learn, right? So I would suggest that it's supposed to start, since it's a circle, at measure. So at the very beginning, talk to people, hear what they're saying, and measure their level of interest in what you're creating, right? So measure it, learn from that, and then build something. So even though they call this the build, measure, learn cycle, I would like to call it the measure, learn, build cycle if it were up to me. But he has more experience than me, so maybe he knows better. So that's the lean process. Cycle time matters. How quickly can you get through this process? Build, measure, learn, build, measure, learn, build, measure, learn. So if that whole process takes you 12 months, somebody else is probably beating you to market. If you can do it in 12 days, that's better. That sounds insane, but we're going to show you an example that will show you that it's not for a medical device, which everyone says, oh, it's a medical device. We can't use lean. Yes, you can. You can use this for anything. So, and pivot until you find the product market fit. So we'll talk about pivoting in a little bit.
So I guess the one that's been most tangible for me, I don't think it's the most important thing I need to be testing, but it's the one thing I'm grasping, and I can't wait to like dive into this tonight or tomorrow and keep going. But it's the concept of people liking local versus global charities. So the test card is we believe that people care about local charities more. To verify that, we'll run an A/B test. It'll be a Facebook suggested post, one saying, you know, maybe pitching, do you care more about global? One saying more about local. Whichever one gets more clicks, and I actually put an exact measurement to be analytical about this. If the local charity ad gets 2/3 of all clicks, then we're doing something right.
Right. So then you pick it. Great.
That simple.
Okay. You're good.
What's the content of the ad for both ads?
I'm thinking maybe it would just be a headline and a picture. And, you know, just the initial ad, they would probably be, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I've never really done it before.
So to get away from the sort of icky feel of it, you could actually make it a donation link to two different charities, one of them being like UNICEF and one of them being the local Harbor House or whatever it is. So you put two on there, click through to donate. It just takes them to their page. If they want to donate, great, you've done some good.
Should I make it, no, I 100% agree with you. Should I make it about a similar cause?
Yeah.
Okay. To keep that variable constant.
Yeah.
Got you.
Water in Flint versus water in sub-Saharan Africa.
Right. That's actually a really good point, because sometimes we want to focus so much on the world around us, but we don't help each other at home.
Mm-hmm. So, and that would be domestic versus global.
Exactly.
Similar, yeah. Local versus something, yeah.
That's interesting. Cool.
Now, Squiggle is David Pangros and Ron Benzeev. And while Ron is the dynamic face and voice of the business, David is the developer and mathematician of the business. And it turns out that multi-city travel is a tougher nut to crack than it may seem.
Well, again, we believe that multi-city travel planning takes a long time. And to verify that, we're going to hire a few agents to plan unique multi-city itineraries. for three more cities. And there's some nuance there that they all are going to have different numbers of days for each, so they can't be reusing stuff they've already searched. And so we're going to measure the time it takes for them to get back to us and find a solution to the problem. And we're basically right if they need more than 4 hours to do three cities.
Okay, so now the only problem I can see with that is whether they need more than 4 hours and whether they take more than 4 hours are two different things.
Right. No, I see that. Maybe they're busy and then don't get back to us. You know, if we can start comparing, we're going to have to do some manual work to compare them. First of all, to see if they may come back really fast and have a terrible solution to the problem,
sure.
Which means they just completely blew it off and just did whatever they wanted, which might be indicate to us what their current solution is.
So when testing a hypothesis with customers, we've talked about this, what people say and what people do are two different things. People lie. And again, it's not malicious. It's not intentional. It's like, I really think that I do it this way, but I don't. We're not really self-aware as humans, really. So you want to produce evidence, and the strongest evidence is here at the bottom. So interest and relevance. You ask people, are you interested in that? Yes, you'll get a lot of heads nodding. I am interested in buying local. Yes, I am. Great. So do you care if that's local by, you know, this person, that person? Do you care if it's great quality? What do you care about? Details about it. And if I can tell you some of those details, then that's probably a stronger indication that I actually care. Awesome. Here's two objects. One is local, one is not. Will you buy this one? If I give you my credit card information, that is a very, very strong validation, much, much stronger than a head nod, right? So other things that indicate a strong, we call that an action. Will I take an action that indicates that it's true what I said? So actions, getting a credit card is one of the strongest ones. Getting an email address is actually also pretty strong. If someone will give you their email address through an online form, it indicates that they went there, they were interested enough to know that I'm going to get spammed by these folks. I'm going to get put on their newsletter. I'm going to get contacted if I give you my email address, and I'm willing to do that. That indicates a strong interest. What I find is really interesting sometimes is if you give someone a new app, I say we all turn into apes. We put it down, and we immediately start going, like all of a sudden you forgot how to use the rest of your fingers, right? But it's interesting to watch that process and see what people try to do. And you don't have to have a functioning app to do that. You can give them something that's fake. The Wizard of Oz idea is that you're going to create this platform that does something awesome. Like, you guys would be a great example of a Wizard of Oz thing. So someone comes to your page and you've completely faked it. So the person can put their cities in and say, I want to search these cities. And then you get that information and you go and do the searching, right? You're going to eventually have an algorithm that will do that and will scale. But for now, I'm going to do it behind the scenes and send you the information. So you don't know that that didn't work. You know that you put in the information, you got out the information. So, but behind the scenes, it didn't work. So we call that a Wizard of Oz MVP. MVP stands for minimum viable product. So it's just something that you can test with people who really, really want your product. So if I'm desperate for this to work, I don't care that he's doing it behind the scenes and that it took 2 days, because it was 2 days that I didn't spend doing it. So minimal contains only elementary or core features. It does not have to be pretty. It does not have to work at high speed. It can be slow. It can be ugly, as long as it accomplishes the task, the job that the customer is trying to do. It has to be quick. You have to be able to create multiple versions rapidly. So, oh, you get the customer feedback that this totally didn't work for me. Great. How about this one? And you can get that to them quickly. So it's cheap, cheap enough to throw away and start again, because you don't want to get attached to these things. So ugly is good because you'll be happy to throw it away, but cheap is even better. All right, so testable. This is the trick. When you're creating an MVP, you want to make it something that you're going to get the information back that you wanted to get. And it also helps you to, instead of just telling them about it, you can actually show it to them and get their real feedback.
I asked David why he decided to get on board with the squiggle idea.
Ron, my co-founder, had approached me about it, and I kind of laughed it off and said, You know, this is an incredibly well-known and incredibly difficult problem in computer science. And so much so that there's actually a like million-dollar prize if you can prove that it can be done in polynomial time, which I won't get into. It's a well-understood problem. I went, actually had a trip to Asia for about 2 weeks and had lots of time on a plane and started, you know, messing around with ideas and coding, and emailed them after I got off the flight going there and said, you know, I have this, we can do this basically in real time for X number of cities. I don't remember how many it was. So yeah, let's do this. Once I started thinking about it from the mathematical point of view and the computer science point of view, I love a challenge.
The traveling salesman problem is a well-known mathematical challenge, or at least as well-known as a complex mathematical problem can be. The name comes from the issue a traveling salesman would have planning his route. If he has 10 stops in a day, and then he needs to travel home, he'll want to figure out the most efficient way of making the trip without crossing his path. Now, most people would simply go from each point to the next closest point, which may optimize for the way there, but not for the way back. It turns out that if you have a route with 10 stops, there are 3,628,800 possible combinations of routes to take. Now, just to take the math to the next level, let's say you wanted to solve for a bigger number, maybe the best route between 148 points. That would require 2.55 times 10 to the 258th power. That's a big number. But let's put this in perspective. Today's computers are able to perform about a billion operations every second. And the number of seconds in the life of the universe is about 10 to the 17th power. If we had been examining routes since the beginning of the universe, we'd been considering only about 10 to the 26th power. So let's just say the traveling salesman problem can't just be fixed with brute computational processing power. Squiggle is not only solving for the best route, they're also solving for the best price and a predetermined length of stay. It's heavy math, but David likes the challenge.
You're motivated to do this project. Why?
Because I solve problems. That's my wife says I'm not happy unless I'm building or fixing something.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. And it's my birthday.
Okay.
So.
Well, happy birthday.
So this is like a really big problem for you to solve. This is like one that if you solve it, it's worth you being an attorney and putting that on hold for a while in order to solve this problem.
Well, yeah, I've been coding pretty much my whole life. I mean, I started when I was about 8 years old. It was my first love, and it'll always be my brain works in code. The name of the actual problem is the traveling salesman problem. There's actually books about it, but I call this the traveling salesman problem on steroids because it's not just the traveling salesman problem. It's got unique challenges. Some of the properties that are part of the traveling salesman problem no longer apply to us. It's actually even a more general problem and a more difficult problem. And so in some respects, it's crazy, but we're doing it, but I think we have a pretty good solution for it.
But you're kind of doing it because it's crazy.
Yes, kind of. Yeah, at least in part.
The good news is Mark Baratelli of Big Box Of made it back for day number 2 of the boot camp. The bad news is he declined to talk to us.
Validating.
What are you working on?
I can't talk today.
Now, there are a lot of great ways to test ideas and validate with customers, but at the root, you really just need to get out there and talk to potential customers and get a better feel for who they are, the jobs they need to get done, and how you can tailor your product to do them.
I guess my first question is, you know, have you ever given to charity or donated in any way?
Donated clothes and toys. Mm-hmm. I'm not the type of person that leaves cash to like random people around the street.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to give something, I want to be sure that it's going somewhere, you know, and it's being productive for someone.
Interesting. And so have you donated any kind of like financial way before, or is it only clothes and things?
It's usually clothes and toys and things and food at some point, but never financially.
No. Okay. Interesting. You mentioned that as long as you know where it's going, is that what you said?
More like if I know where it's going, it's like I just, what I think of it, like if you're going to take like the effort, for example, people around the street, you never know what they're going to use it for. Because if they're going to buy alcohol or drugs or something, then, you know, I'm not sure about that. But I'll definitely give them food. Sometimes if they say they're hungry and I'll offer food, I'll, you know, sometimes they say, no, I don't want food. I want cash. And I'm like, okay, I don't have any cash. I have food. You want food? Okay.
You're always going to their belly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's like a good purpose, I guess.
Interesting. So why haven't you, I guess, given to, you know, a charity of some kind with money?
Because I don't have a lot of it, I guess. I mean, I would definitely, like, I feel, like, if I had, like, you know, like, a loose, you know, budget or something, mm-hmm. I would definitely put some aside, and I would start my own organization. Like, I wouldn't mind it.
Tom walked through Canvas looking for someone willing to do a customer validation interview with him. He found a young lady who goes by the name Liz. And not only did she help Tom with feedback, she had an interesting story to tell.
Importance in that word, in that experience being tangible.
Yeah, I guess definitely. I mean, there's no way for me to say that if you have certain experience, then forever you're going to be like related to it, yeah. You know, because, you know, some people forget where they're from. And like, there's like no way to determine or track back to like, why are you not so empathetic or not? There's like, you know, a million variables that can, yeah, or a million definitely. Factors that can, you know.
We're diving into some fascinating stuff. This is pretty cool. It's really insane. Like, you never know what you're gonna get out of a conversation. Mm. We probably should have done this like 2 months ago. So take me back to your donating experience so we can get a tangible example. Like, when was the last time you did any kind of donation?
Any sort of donation. I'm always like giving clothes and toys. I would say Christmas, you know, every time like you see an organization collecting toys and stuff like that. It's not like I'm looking for it all the time, but you know, sometimes I have things in my house that I'm not using that I probably am attached to for some reason. And I'm like, okay, I need to let go. Somebody else may like,
where do you go with that? What do you do?
There are like plenty of things out there, you know, in malls, they're always like collecting stuff. So, you know, I'll collect a bunch of things and I'll tell my boyfriend or anyone that is around me, like, hey, I'm collecting toys. Do you have something in there? Like, you know, or shoes or clothes or stuff like that. You know, there's like shoes and clothes drop offs everywhere. So anytime like I grow out like something or I really don't wear this anymore and it looks new, so I'll drop it off. Then you hope for the best. I mean, I feel like it's a waste when you like throw things away that are still usable.
I agree.
Yeah.
So what about online, like an online platform that would provide these opportunities, these giving, these stories, I guess, per se, and allow you to join them?
I guess that would be good. I mean, you could select whatever is the case that you feel more related to, you know, according to your own story or personal experience, and then you can help out someone in the other side of the country or in the other side of the world. And I guess it could be rewarded because some people feel closer to, you know, certain causes rather than other causes. And you're always looking for that one thing that fits you and only you.
And you mentioned I can help someone across the world or across the country. What if the platform was just in, you know, a certain city and was just about causes in one city, your city? How would that change your thoughts?
It doesn't. No, I mean, it can be, you know, like a city, a county thing, global thing. I feel like, you know, in the city, you'll feel closer to it. If there is to be like a social impact, you'll see it because you live there, right? Yeah. So you'll be able to see it quicker. And there can be a platform to like reach out these people that would help, but don't have the tools or don't have the knowledge or like, how do we organize this whole thing and say, okay, let's put all of this to like one purpose that we're going to be able to see, because if it's local, then you're going to see the results. Yeah. For example, I did financially donate it once.
Here we go.
Yes. I donated $3 to Wikipedia.
Oh, I did that too.
Yeah.
They don't go begging for your money. They just kind of go, hey guys, like, we're 100% funded. Can you help us out?
And the thing is, they don't do advertising. They don't do anything vicious or anything. And I'm a journalist, so I believe in like freedom of speech and information and all that stuff. So like Wikipedia is a cause for me to
cause.
Yeah.
So what caused you, out of every opportunity where people are asking for money, why that exact cause? Why did you donate $3?
Because I'm strongly related to that cause. I believe in freedom. Again, I believe in freedom of information. For me, education is like key to society. Exactly. So this is a nonprofit organization that won't be biased by any sponsor or anything. They rather ask for the money. And I benefited myself many times from Wikipedia too, you know?
Now, I'm not sure if you caught on to this or heard what Tom just said. When they were talking about donating to Wikipedia, he said a lot of high school essays. And it's funny because Liz looks extremely young, but we learned pretty quickly that Liz has had some pretty unique life experiences.
So I was behind, politics and the way it affected our society and the way it affected us as people. So that's pretty much what I was doing. In my latest work I did, I'm not trying to say that I'm like a big influence in my country or anything like that, but when I came here, like right before I came here, a series of protestations were being held in the entire country, in every single city. So, and the media wouldn't show any of that. So the police was like free to like go ahead and shoot in the name of the government to like 18-year-old kids. And every day they would have 50 disappeared people in the protest. Like my son went to the protest and didn't come back because they would like grab 50 kids, 40, 50 kids from like anywhere, put them in a truck and then put them in jail for like 48 hours. This to like, as a terrorism measure, something like that, like an oppression thing for like to avoid people from protesting. These kids couldn't like call their families or anything. So we assembled in Caracas like a small team of journalists. We would be in the protest, like see the tank and stuff. Oh, they're taking them. Let's go follow them, because there was no way for them to like communicate to their families. I'm being held in jail or anything. And that's f***ed up. Like,
yeah.
And so we would do that. We would like go after the little tank and see, okay, they got them in this place. You know, Caracas is a big city, so it could have them like anywhere in Caracas, you know. So we would try to like locate them. And then with the representative from the Human Rights Association with us, we would be like, let me go check on them. Who are they? Let me call them. And since the media was not supporting it, because the entire media is like controlled by the government right now, we would like by Twitter, what's your name? Help us like, find his family.
Yeah.
We would do that on Twitter, And at some point, like day after day after day, like people would like reach out to us. Like, I have this name. Can you like locate this person for me? And we'd be like, okay, where is it? calling the different people. And that started to like grow among the country. So internet became like really relevant for politics and for like people to get informed, because you have your kid not coming home. You don't know if he got shot or if he's in jail or got kidnapped or whatever. Like anything could have happened,
Now, I hope you've been enjoying the Accelerator podcast as we follow the starters in Starter Studio. It's very, very cool to be able to watch these starters grow, and you're going to continue to see them grow because of the help of a lot of mentors, teachers, and coaches. Now, these starters were selected because they showed the right stuff in episode 1, and so they are getting Starter Studio completely pro bono. Now, this podcast is also pro bono to you. Now, Brian and I are thrilled to be able to produce this audio show. So all we ask in return is just simply your warm feelings toward the following corporate partners who make this all work. Thank you so much to the University of Central Florida, who does a lot of work in terms of supporting the growing entrepreneurial ecosystem throughout Central Florida. UCF is the number two largest university in the United States in terms of student population and in the top 15 in the category of most innovative. UCF is a great partner in education, technical resources, workforce development, and grant support, along with other noble missions locally, such as helping make Starter Studio happen with the support of the Office of Research and UCF Innovation Corp. Thank you. The other platinum partner this season that's helping this all work is the audit, tax, and business advisory firm Withum. And that's W-I-T-H-U-M. Now, they specialize in helping tech startups. They are the go-to firm for all things accounting and business consulting. If you are a startup, Withum is the go-to firm for you. Now, another partner we want to thank is the law firm Akerman. And of course, we want to thank our other sponsors, NV Labs, Code School, and Corridor Legal. And of course, we want to thank our team, Greg Pollock, who's our founder, Donna McKenzie, the executive director of Starter Studio, and Melissa Wasserman, who's the director of programming and operations.
The questions that Tom started off asking you, do you remember the questions that he started with?
Mm-hmm.
Could you have answered in any other way than you did, even if that wasn't the case? Like, okay, for example, if I were to ask you, do you donate anything? Would it have been easy for you to answer that truthfully?
Yeah, I'm pretty honest.
You are, but do you think it would be easy for most people to answer that honestly?
That's a good question. Maybe not. I mean, because if you do have a little bit of a sense of what's right and what's wrong, then you don't want to come out as heartless or something, you know?
If you are asked, so do you give money? Do you see the moral pressure to say that you do?
No.
You don't feel that, but do you see that other people would feel that moral pressure?
Yeah.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
You kind of were a unique case because you use our very raw, genuine answers, and plus your journalistic side where you kind of get where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. I can definitely see your point where maybe I'm, you know, just kind of assuming things and putting some social pressure that I don't even realize
right. Because
it's my idea. Mm-hmm. So I kind of see where you're coming from. So maybe the key would be for me to really focus in and say in the beginning and set the expectation that this is purely research. I just want your honest opinion. No one here is judging you. Just give it to me, like give it to me the real way.
Right.
Would you think that would make a difference?
Okay, so quick disclaimer here. I'm not an official mentor in Starter Studio. I'm just the guy with the microphone, right? Well, sometimes it's a little hard for me to stay quiet, especially when someone's asking me for feedback, which Tom does regularly to his credit. What makes this a little unique for me, especially this specific issue, is that, like I've mentioned before, I had a web startup. And I built a lot of things based on feedback that I got in situations where I had enthusiastically led the people I was talking to into being excited about what it is that I was building, as opposed to asking them a question and just seeing what they said.
The issue is that you could get feedback that's tainted by how a person views themselves versus how they actually behave. Because those are two different questions. You are asking questions about how a person views themselves a lot. Once you get past that, because she answered the question, I don't really give money a lot. I give away clothes, I give away things that are tangible. To me, that was the most honest answer that you gave. When you go into the ideology, now you're asking someone to turn and view themselves as a moral being, saying, what kind of person are you? Mm. What would you do if you had more money? What would you do if this happened? What would you do if that happened? Because I want to think, if I won the lottery, I would give it all away to charity, right? Now, what would happen if I did? That would be a totally different circumstance. I don't really know that. But if you ask me that, I'm going to give you really good sounding answers. Right. I'm going to give you answers that are going to serve you thinking that I'm a good person, because there's a social pressure. I want you to think that I am a good person.
Definitely.
And I do think you're a little unique, because you answered very honestly. I just don't know. Like, I was surprised when he asked the question about, you know, like, so why don't you do that? To me, a question that would be maybe a better one. And I learned why is the scariest question you can ask someone, because now you're questioning their motives. You can say, under what circumstances would you give your money to a charity?
That's good.
Because now you're not saying, well, what the hell's wrong with you?
That's super interesting.
Are you, like, super poor or something? I don't know. You know, like there's a, you handled it well, but you see, so you get what I'm,
I definitely see what you're saying. And I agree. Like, as long as people don't feel like you're about to judge them or anything, I mean, what helped me is that I understand the research process and I understand what you're trying to do and I understand an investigation, but not everybody's going to feel the same way about, you know, being in a room with a microphone pointing at your head.
You are a natural.
Yeah. I guess if people can, like, understand from the beginning and, like, feel comfortable about it and be like, I don't know, maybe this is going to be, like, an anonymous thing or whatever, then... Because at the same time, you need to dig in it. You need to look for that reason. Because I know, like, when you say, why not money? I knew it was about money. I knew it was about cash. Like, say, why don't you give money? When you did that, like, I knew.
I didn't know I came off like that.
I knew we were talking about cash and stuff. And I knew that, you know, then toys and clothes and stuff were not as relevant for your research. Like, I knew it. I could see it. But not everybody's going
to. And my goal is to not let you, like, understand completely my motive through my questioning. So that's more where I can get better.
Right.
Is not being so obvious and pointing my questions in a certain manner.
Yeah. You can also manipulate the way you, like, sit in front of people. Like, if you can do a few soft questions at the beginning and, you know, kind of, like, grasp what they're about, then maybe you can change your position to a point where, like, they... not have them agree with you at all, but you being more empathetic to what they're feeling. So maybe you don't care that much about giving out money, you know, and people would be more compelled to say or confess that.
So maybe I change how I view things to get certain outcome from you.
You change the treatment. You could do that. I mean, that's something
you journalists do.
That's what you could do. That's exactly what you could do. You'd be like, you know, if I wanted to get some information for someone in the government, I would, like, wear my red shirt and be like, hey, you know, you infiltrate a little. When I say red shirt, it's like that's my government's color or whatever. Like, you try to, like, infiltrate a little bit. So people feel natural telling you the things that they wouldn't tell normal people around.
Definitely. Right. I can't be a two-faced type of person. I can't. I'm really bad at lying. Yeah.
Because I'm not saying, like, you should encourage points of view that you don't like, but you need to get this information anyways.
Yeah.
Like, it comes down to, like, you need
the right information is the key.
So you have to set your priorities, you know, and, like, separate a little bit from what you believe if it's too radical.
Instead of being, like, more subjective one way or the other, just be more objective is the ultimate key.
It's being able to walk along the same train of thought that they're walking along without attempting to lead them. Like, well, what about this, though?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because I guess I've been doing that my whole life.
When you do that, it's a very good way of influencing people. It's a very effective way.
Yeah.
Like, it's using questions as a means of influence versus questions as a means to get the actual answer.
But you have different goals in here. You're doing, like, a pure research thing.
Yeah.
That's what I think. That's what I get from it. Mm-hmm. But if you were to work in Fox News, then... you would try to, like, influence a little bit more and have them walk with you.
And that's not the pure goal of this.
Has to be clear for you and only you, what is it that you're trying to do? Is this like a research thing, or do I want to favor organizations, you know, the charity organizations, or am I just, you know, trying to get a point clear? What is it that you're trying to do?
You're completely right. I need to be more about... I'm looking for raw and genuine information, not necessarily trying to get you to agree with me. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that confirmation bias.
It's feedback versus validation. You are the type of person who can turn everybody's feedback into validation.
Right.
You're very good at that. Okay. The problem is you don't want validation. Like, and I know we're talking about customer validation, right? But it's a funny thing. But we're talking about personal validation. Because you can very easily go into a room and you can convince people that your idea is awesome.
Yeah.
You can convince people that your way of looking at the world is awesome. You're good at that. Mm-hmm. But that's a detriment in customer validation because the problem is you're going to come out with, at the end of the day, it's awesome idea. It's an awesome idea.
It's something someone may not use.
Exactly.
Right.
And the, because that's the biggest problem with startups is you will create this thing because everyone tells you, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome. This is what I did. I spent $100,000 and built an awesome product that nobody uses.
Right.
Because when rubber meets the road, they wouldn't change their habits.
And I would say I have two words for you. It's thanking you. Thank you. Like, we need all the help we can get here. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. So thank you as well. Yeah. That was really powerful stuff.
So Melissa brought everyone back in and grilled them about how their customer conversations, how their customer interviews went.
Okay, who did at least one interview? Okay, who did more than three? Excellent. Okay. So we've got people that did a couple. How many did you get to, Thomas?
I had like 140 minutes.
And that will happen, which is fine. Just make sure that it's as focused as you can try to make it. So you're going to try to steer people back.
It was good, but it was also an amazing learning experience.
Yes.
So that was, there's a lot of value there.
So what did you learn?
I learned that it's important to have no agenda going in. And even if we think that, we think we have no agenda coming in, we usually do. It's just to be more self-aware. Because I think we all have this issue where we're trying to validate our product by getting the right answers. But really we should be focusing on getting the right answers so we can either validate it or throw it in the garbage. So that was a huge point. Like, everyone should take in because we just had a great experience.
I need the bag of candy over here so I can throw you a piece. That was fabulous. Fabulous. I did not plant that, I swear.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You are in the back. we were dropping some good stuff. So.
Melissa has made it clear that the customer validation done during the bootcamp is just scratching the surface. The starters will need to talk to tons of customers and run many tests to validate their ideas. The founders will also need to learn a lot about marketing, financials, and legal. Next time on Accelerator.
Because it's really serious, you know.
We both
trust each other a lot, and you know, we think it's going to be a really positive experience. But it's also important to have these conversations.
Yeah.
So tell me about, you know, the legal aspects of that.
The founders' agreements and equity. So again, we will be going to depth on this.
As always, I want to thank the staff of Starter Studio and Canvas for just allowing us to do this. I want to give special thanks to Kevin Hutchinson for giving us recording help, as well as Tony Elam, who did the same. Josh Elledge was our host today on the Accelerator podcast, and I was the producer. I want to just remind you that going and subscribing on iTunes is one of the best things you can do for the podcast. That way you get the podcast in your feed every time. And also, if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be super helpful. Now, when I say iTunes, some people get confused because I'm talking about iTunes like on the computer. But if you're using your iPhone, you just go to that little purple podcast app that looks like a tower. You can just, you know, downswipe and start typing in podcasts, and that app will come up. And that's where you want to go on and find the podcast and give us a review and subscribe to it. That would be much appreciated. And then that way you make sure that you don't miss any of the Accelerator podcast. Thank you as always for listening. And I'll talk to you soon on Accelerator.